I'm Beverly Volzek, and I'm a writer and a small press publisher. And I've been here a week teaching classes and been having a good time with those who come. If you heard Vespers last night, it was on breathing. And if you heard the Matins this morning, it was on breathing. And lo and behold, what we're doing today is going to be a little on the same thing. We're going to do a guided meditation and then do some writing exercises.
Can I interrupt a minute?
Yes, certainly.
What was that author's name that you said that her dad was an alcoholic?
Laura Mills.
Laura Mills?
Right.
L-A-U?
L-A-U-R-E-L. And just Mills, M-I-L-L-S.
Thank you.
She's a wonderful, all of her books, she has other books of poetry out, and they've all won awards in Wisconsin, and she teaches classes all over. A very accomplished writer. Now let's see if I can settle down here and figure out which direction I'm going here. Okay, I'm going to start with, just to quiet us down, one poet I would recommend. In here we don't do prose or poetry. I don't ask you to write any specific genre, but I do read most of poetry because I think it gets the closest to the bone the quickest, and there are some wonderful writers out there. In the short time that we have, we don't get very far with much. But Mary Oliver is a wonderful poet who writes a lot about nature and about animals, and that's going to be the subject of our writing today. So this one is called Morning at Great Pond. It starts like this. Forks of light slicking up out of the east, flying over you, and what's left of night, its black waterfalls, its craven doubt, dissolves like gravel as the sun appears, trailing clouds of pink and green wool, igniting the fields, turning the ponds to plates of fire. The creatures there are dark flickerings you make out one by one as the light lifts. Great blue herons, wood ducks shaking their shimmering crests, and knee-deep in the purple shallows, a deer drinking. As she turns, the silver water crushes like silk, shaking the sky, and you're healed then from the night. Your heart wants more. You're ready to rise and look, to hurry anywhere, to believe everything. Her poems are like prayers, I think. Enjoy them very much. I'm going to talk about just some introductory things first, so that in case people do come in, and a few people that I know are coming have been here before, so have heard this. The writing book that I recommend, if you are looking for a good writing book, is probably Writing Down the Bones by the same author, Natalie Goldberg, or this one called Wild Mind, and it's just kind of a continuance writing on the same sort of thing as she writes about in the first book. And the type of writing that we are going to do while we're writing is a writing practice that she recommends for writers and that she discovered through herself, for herself, through a long process of writing and writing and deciding what was best. And of course, you all probably know, you've all probably taken lots of workshops. What you do is take what works for you, and the rest you just leave in the wastebasket as you leave. Except, if you don't want the copies, you can leave those on the table and I can reuse those. But remember that writing is a very individual thing, it's a very personal thing, so you find your own way. What we do as writers is we read other writers and we listen to them and ask them how they write and when they write and all that sort of thing. And then we find our own way from that and what works for us. So this is what we'll be using. This is a writing class where you're not supposed to think. You're supposed to let your unconscious come in and take hold. And while you're letting the pen flow over the page, not thinking lets the unconscious come to the surface. So we'll just look at there are only 7 steps here. You keep your hand moving. Once I give you the signal to write, you simply write the first thoughts that come to your mind, even if it's not about what I've just talked about or what's on the sheet of paper that you're supposed to write or anything. You take the first thoughts, because what's happening is the words I use are going to trigger something in you, and it may not necessarily be what I've been talking about. So you follow whatever it triggers in you, because that's the unconscious coming to the surface. Don't do what the teacher says if your voice inside says something else. Okay? Lose control. Say what you want to say. Don't worry if it's correct, polite, appropriate, etc. Don't worry that someone's going to be offended by it, or your mother won't like you anymore, or somebody else, or whatever. You write whatever comes, and that means sometimes losing control. Be specific. Try to use details, colors, smells, sounds, tastes. All of those things are part of us. What you feel, how you feel in a certain situation or whatever is coming, how you feel about what you're writing. And as it says here, not just car, but a Cadillac or a Ford or maybe a silver Eldorado or whatever. Be specific. And then again, four again, don't think. Stay with the first flash. Just practice and forget everything else. That's what this is. This is practice. And this is generating material for all kinds of other writing. And what writing is, if this is your beginning with writing, writing, the fact that you sit down to a sheet of paper means that you are willing to engage in a conversation with yourself and with the sacred within. So it's a very exciting beginning. Don't worry about punctuation, spelling, and grammar, and you are free to write the worst junk in America. No one's going to say, oh, that's terrible, do it over again, or anything like that. So just write whatever comes. And go for the jugular. If something scary comes up, go for it. That means something is coming and you think, oh, that's going to be upsetting, I don't want to write that. Those are the things that you really need to write. So every time you think you start wanting to change the subject, that's probably the time you should keep pushing through on that. And what we do is time sessions. So on your own, you can take sentences, you can take words, you can take topics, and then time yourself and just write for that length of time with that word or on that phrase or anything. So you have exercises that you can do for a long time to come. Okay, we're going to do a... Natalie Goldberg, by the way, uses wild mind instead of the term unconscious because she thinks unconscious is too limiting. And she says, a river and a tree are not unconscious. They are part of the wild mind. Let yourself live in something that is already rightfully yours, your own wild mind. This is about loss of control. Lose control and let wild mind take over. It is the best way to write, to live, too. So we don't want things that come, the normal things that come to us. We want words put together that we don't normally think of as being together, so that we look at things new and fresh. Okay, now we're going to do a guided imagery. And this is just a really very simple one, and it isn't a very long one. And on this journey that I'm going to guide you on, you will simply try to envision whatever it is I'm talking about. But again, if something else jumps into this image, go with that. Don't worry about following. So guided imagery is something you can do by yourself. They have tapes of it. You can listen to them, and it's a good way of relaxing. It reduces tension. It's good for people who are hypertensive or have high blood pressure besides. But it's just to empty your mind out of all the things that have been going on outside. So if you'll just get, maybe move your chair back from the table a little bit and put your pens and pencils down. And just so you're comfortable, and you can close your eyes or not, and you can lay your hands out so they're open to whatever is coming if you like, or you can just, whatever is comfortable for you. It'll only be about 3 minutes probably. And then just close your eyes and take a few of those deep breaths we've been hearing about to clear everything out of your body. Empty it out and just concentrate on where we are right now. Although we're going to remain seated where we are, I'd like you to imagine yourself in a meadow. It's a perfect day. Look back into your unconscious and find a perfect day that you would like to repeat. The weather is beautiful. The sky is full of big white fleecy clouds scudding across. We're going to go into that darkness behind our eyes on this journey on a perfect day. It won't be the same journey for all of us, but I will guide you and you may go wherever you like. So if you have this favorite day now, imagine this perfect day again. You're standing in a meadow or on a mountaintop or in a valley, wherever you have imagined yourself. Now imagine yourself extending your hands and moving them around. Can you feel the tall grass, how cool it is against your fingers? Or the breeze coming down the mountainside. Now let your body sway there in the meadow or wherever it is you are on this journey. Sway with the breeze that is blowing. Keep motion with it. Feel the earth up through the bottoms of your shoes. Or better yet, kick your shoes off and feel it all directly through the bottoms of your feet. Feel the air on your skin and the sun. Feel it soak into your muscles. Let your body respond to all you are feeling. Raise your hands and your arms up toward the heat, towards the wind. Now move off through the tall grass or across the meadow, or maybe further up the mountainside. Dance if you like. Turn and sway in the warm air. You smell odors you'd forgotten. You hear sounds you haven't heard for many months. You remember voices and people you haven't thought of in years. You begin feeling in your body movements your body hardly knows anymore. You breathe in deep breaths as you stretch toward the sky. Exhale as you sweep your arms down into the grass. Let your body move and let your mind move with it. As your body continues to sway and move with the breeze, you look around you. And on a small knoll in front of you is an animal watching you. It is an animal you have been looking for. This is your totem animal, and you wonder how long it has been there. It seems to be smiling at you, or at least to be happy to be watching you, and you are glad to see it. You sway and walk toward it, extending your hand. The animal comes toward you. It remains beside you as you sway and swirl back across the high grass meadow. The two of you stand breathing deeply together. When you are both ready to return, go to your paper and pencil and write about the journey you have just taken and about the animal you have found. Come back slowly from your perfect day and write. And I will give you a signal when the time is up for writing. This wonderful quote on the breath. Edward Lawrence, a meteorologist, said that the tiny air currents that a butterfly creates travel across thousands of miles, jostling breezes as they go and eventually change the weather. So your breath travels miles the same way our breath travels miles and links us to all things large and small. I thought that was a wonderful thing to know. Okay, let's just go around and when we go around to read, if you don't want to read, you may pass. It makes the class much less interesting, and you can only pass once. So if it's something that you would rather not read in front of people, that's perfectly all right to pass on. Mm-hmm. Why don't we start back there?
I'm gonna pass.
You're gonna pass.
This is my first time in a writing class.
Wonderful, wonderful. Your life will be changed.
Yeah.
Well, it's my first time too, but my friends have been telling me how great this is.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, let's see. First, I thought of a mountain hike to Park City, Utah, and coming home over the mountain, coming back to camp. When you mentioned an animal, I thought of my dog Daisy, who I love very much. Then I thought of Sparky, who was our family dog for many years. We got her as a puppy for my husband, as we felt he needed a male around. When she had four puppies, we knew we'd go. I thought of my dog Ike, named for President Eisenhower. Ike was my dog when I was a child. She or he, I don't remember which, would sleep on my bed on the sleeping porch when it was in.
Good. Next.
It wells up in me, this feeling that is Betty, the sadness over the loss, the regrets over what did not happen, experiences we did not share together. Love that was there, but unspoken. Her music perhaps fulfilling my boyhood dream of performing word and song. She fills my thoughts now with a warmth and sadness that cushions the loss and draws us closer even as we part. I find in her offspring some qualities of her that give me solace.
Thank you.
My perfect day was in such a perfect setting that I couldn't bear to leave the relaxation it brought to me. I found myself amid a myriad of wildflowers of yellow, crimson, blue, and white, delicate and swaying in the breeze. It was wonderful to be at the base of the mountains in a meadow warmed by the sun. I was wearing a white peasant blouse and a filmy full skirt, bare feet with long loose hair, and a wreath of white daisies and Indian paintbrush in my hair.
The snake is my animal totem in my medicine wheel teachings. I think of the snake a lot. It is one that follows me a lot. I believe it is my inspiration and my guide to help me become whole. I feel comfortable being with the snake. It protects me and I endure because of it. When I'm asleep, I feel I'm talking with a snake. When I'm daydreaming, I think of the snake. One of the ideas I think of is its uniqueness and comfort to me.
In your tradition, when do you find your... I mean, you didn't just get this out of the meditation.
No.
No. Okay, no. So how do you find your totem animal on the medicine wheel? In your tradition?
In my tradition.
Yeah.
I am the snake person.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
My thoughts always go back into being part of the snake. And I fell asleep and I woke up and you said something about totem and snake.
Keep you awake.
She said totem.
Well, there is a wonderful book with cards that are animal cards that people who are not in your tradition and don't have that use quite a bit.
I've heard that, yeah.
Okay.
Hot summer in southern Minnesota. South wind is blowing softly over the meadow. Yellow flashes of color dance in the breeze. Farther afield, my brother plows the cornfield. A sweet, dank, smart smell of black earth rises behind the tractor and plow. A meadowlark rises from the field with a sharp sound of alarm. Behind the rows of corn stand straight in rows, rows that run off in all directions in perfect alignment. Soon the corn will be tall enough to tassel out.
The eyes held me in its gaze. I felt the soft, doe-like eyes smiling in approval as I danced toward him in the flowery meadow. Without a command, he followed me through the wild grasses and flowers. Where should we go? Should we follow the radiant rays of the sun or wander down to the slowly stream? That's not right. The slow stream with its musical sounds. With its musical sounds. Somehow, the rivulet with its melodious notes pulled me to its side. When we reach the beckoning stream, come.
Would you like to change your mind now that you've heard everyone else?
No.
Right, what you must remember about writing is that every time you begin anew, because writing is an act of discovery. It's not something you plan to sit down and write. I mean, people do that intentionally, but I think most of your great writing comes out of coming to the piece of paper without any idea what you're going to write.
I feel like I'm in kindergarten.
Oh no. You know more than that. Natalie Goldberg has a new novel, too, and I just started it, and I'm afraid it's going to be just like, I shouldn't say I'm afraid. It is autobiographical, and it's going to be quite a bit like her writing books. I think it's been all about writing, and I'm only on page 43, but this is what she says, and this is after she had graduated and so forth. She wanted to be a writer and didn't know how to do it. What I was doing was slowly studying how one writes. I didn't presume anything. I began at zero. I just examined things and kept hunting for essence. I was neutral. I had no ideas. I didn't believe anything until I tasted it. This wasn't conscious. If something glowed, I went toward it. If it taught me how to write, I ate it up. I had to get really dumb. Dumb is a negative word in our society. It wasn't for me. I had to allow myself the dumbness of innocence. I had to become curious and not presume anything. I had to be amazed at the sunrise. I had to let it be a wonder each morning. That is the level I had to ground myself down to. So we have to go way back to the beginning. And
so kindergarten's all right. So
in the right grade. We're all at the beginning, every day.
The name of that is The Long Man.
This is called The Long Quiet Highway, and it is in the bookstore. And I think they have her writing books, too, up there. I haven't seen them yet, but they say they're there.
Yeah, they did them.
Well, they're probably Writing Down the Bones.
Oh, Writing Down the Bones.
Yeah, is the one that's up there. I'm not sure. This is her second one. But there are some other good books on writing, too. I see they had one out on the middle table. Well, last week we did some writing with objects. And this session we're going to be writing about animals. And I just want to read a couple of poems to you to sort of show you how much they are used. Denise Levertov is in her 60s, and she's probably one of the most famous poets, but you probably never heard of her. But she has a whole book called, I won't be able to give you the name. It's all about Pig, anyway. And every poem in the book is about Sylvia. It's just the story of Sylvia. And I happen to have a daughter who had a pet pig for a while, and so this book was one that meant a lot to us. But this one is called Her Destiny. So to show you that you can write about anything. The beginning. Piglet among piglets, the soft mud caking our mother's teats, sweet squeal, grunt, her stiff white lashes, the sleepy glint of her precious tiny eyes. But I am Sylvia, chosen. I was established, pet, to be the pig of dreams, the pig any one of us could be, taken out of the sty, away from the ravaged soil of pig yards, freed from boredom and ugliness. I was chosen to live without dread of slaughter. For 3 days after they took me, I hungered. Nowhere a teat to suck from, no piglet siblings to jostle and nudge. At last, in the full moon's sacred light, in the human room where I'd run in circles till my tapping trotters almost gave way, the he-human, naked and white as my lost mother, bent on all fours over my untouched bowl, his beard a veil before me, and with musical loud sounds of guzzling, showed me eating, gave me the joy of survival. Quick learner, soon I could hold my shit. I was rocked in warm human arms. I liked laps, the thighs of humans, cuddling. Every pig could be cuddled if there were justice. Every human could have its intelligent pig. Every pig is dexterous human. Our lives would be rich as creamy corn, tasty as acorns. And the whole book is like that, and it has wonderful, delightful drawings, almost childlike drawings in it, of this pig and the humans. And then you can also go much more beyond that. Robert Bly does much writing about objects and things in nature. And this one is called Winter Poem, and he has a wonderful book, if you like love poetry, called Loving a Woman in Two Worlds, and this is a poem from that book. But again, he uses...
Is that the one from Minneapolis? Mm-hmm. I mean, Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's right. Good. Oh.
He is good. Uh-huh. Thank you. Everyone doesn't think that.
Oh, right.
He's gotten to be quite a guru in the men's movement. So. But he has some wonderful, wonderful poetry. And this one is called Winter Poem, but he uses an ant, the winter ant, to write this beautiful poem. The quivering wings of the winter ant wait for leaving winter to end. I love you in slow, dim-witted ways, hardly speaking, one or two words only. What caused us each to live hidden? A wound, the wind, a word, a parent. Sometimes we wait in a helpless way, awkwardly, not whole and not healed. When we hid the wound, we fell back from a human to a shelled life. Now we feel the ant's hard chest, the carapace, the silent tongue. This must be the way of the ant, the winter ant, the way of those who are wounded and want to live, to breathe, to sense another, and to wait. And then I have two bear poems. I haven't seen a bear here yet. And there are bears here, they tell me. Jim Harrison is a Michigan poet, and he has a wonderful book here called The Theory and Practice of Rivers. But he has a poem called My Friend the Bear. And he had all of his books have the same artist do the covers and the drawings on the inside, and the artist is in Montana. But this is My Friend the Bear. Down in the bone myth of the cellar of this farmhouse, behind the empty fruit jars, the whole wall swings open to the room where I keep the bear. There's a tunnel to the outside on the far wall that emerges in the lilac grove in the backyard, but she rarely uses it, knowing there's no room around here for a freewheeling bear. She's not a dainty eater, so once a day I shovel shit while she lopes in playful circles. Privately, she likes religion. From the bedroom, I hear her incantatory moans and howls below me. And April 23rd, when I open the car trunk and whistle at midnight, and she shoots up the tunnel almost airborne when she meets the night. We head north, and her growls are less friendly as she scents the forest above the road stone. I release her where I found her as an orphan 3 years ago, bawling against the dead carcass of her mother. I let her go at the head of the gully leading down to the swamp, jumping free of her snarls and roars. But each October 9th, one day before bear season, she reappears at the cabin, frightening the bird dogs. We embrace ear to ear, her huge head on my shoulder, her breathing like God's.
And then the spring takes her back out and then lets her come home when it's...
And I don't know how much of it's true.
No.
I think, I mean, you never know with writers, you know. Because what you do, even when you're doing an exercise, you know, it doesn't all have to be true. You have some truth, and you have the truth that's important is not in the details. For example, Tim O'Brien wrote a book, and he had some northern Minnesota ball team having silver football uniforms, and some of them from that town said, but they didn't have silver uniforms, and he said, well, they should have. Yeah. So the truth that you're interested in getting across is the truth of your own life, not, you know, necessarily details and so forth. And this one is one by Mary Oliver, and again it's on a bear, but in a little different aspect. But the point that these poems make is opening yourself to the wonder of everything that's around us, and that we're all part of that, and that we can't... I heard someone say, well, I write about life and love as opposed to trees and things like that. And I thought, well, that's life too, so we're all part of that. This one is called In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars. I think I've got the wrong poem. This would be a better one. This one's the one about the bear. The chance to love everything. It's wonderful. title for it. All summer, I made friends with the creatures nearby. They flowed through the fields and under the tent walls or padded through the door, grinning through their many teeth, looking for seeds, suet, sugar, muttering and humming, opening the bread box, happiest when there was milk and music. But once in the night, I heard a sound outside the door. The canvas bulged slightly. Something was pressing inward at eye level. I watched, trembling, sure I had heard the click of claws, the smack of lips outside my gauzy house. I imagined the red eyes, the broad tongue, the enormous lap. Would it be friendly too? Fear defeated me. And yet, not in faith and not in madness, but with the courage I thought my dream deserved, I stepped outside. It was gone. Then I whirled at the sound of some shambling tonnage. Did I see a black haunch slipping back through the trees? Did I see the moonlight shining on it? Did I actually reach out my arms toward it, toward paradise falling like the fading of the dearest, wildest hope, the dark heart of the story that is all the reason for its telling? And this is a wonderful place to get acquainted with all the creatures, because the chipmunks and the, red squirrels and striped, I mean, there's several little tiny things. And if you leave your doors open to your cabins and so forth, or if you're sitting in the craft house, they may come running in. But they're all there for us to watch and to find out more about our own lives from them. Okay, now we're going to do a timed writing with some of those things in mind. That you can just let your imagination go anywhere. Now some of you, if you didn't get an animal, you need an animal for this writing. So you can pick any kind of animal. It can be one that you've had, or it can be some neighbor's pet, or it can be what you always wished you had as a pet, or it can be wherever your writing takes you. But what I'd like you to do is experience the world from the perspective of that animal. So what your timed writing will be like is writing from, as the voice of that animal, not yourself, but as that animal. So pick your animal and maybe just write the name of the animal at the top, and then do the writing without naming your animal, so that when we hear it, we can maybe guess what animal it is you've picked or which animal you're writing about. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Try to be the animal. That's what you are writing. Finish up on the line that you're on. Okay, the writing that you've already done will give you many more exercises if you want to write on your own. For example, the first one you wrote, you mentioned many, many different pets that you've had. You could start writing about one of those, and each time you do that, your unconscious will take you off into other memories and take you different directions, which is a good thing to do. How many of you journal? Do any of you do journal writing? Never. A journal can be anything, and it can be just for doing this kind of writing. The only thing is, when you do a timed writing, it shouldn't be the kind of thing where you say, well, it's Tuesday and I'm here and this sort of thing. This kind of generative writing, trying to get at the unconscious, should be specifically taking like a word or a name or a city, or, you know, writing from a certain thing and trying to write for, say, like time yourself for 10 minutes the first time. Try to work out so you could get to a longer writing eventually, like a half an hour. Find a space where you won't be interrupted. Don't drink coffee. Don't eat while you're doing it. All you're doing is this engaging yourself with the pen and the paper and writing into the unconscious, not thinking, not saying, oh, I want a piece about my grandmother or anything like that, but just that you want to write whatever comes to you and accept it because it comes, that it's of value. Don't turn anything aside, because that's what happens. We judge those things as they come in and not think them worthy because they're from our life. We want to have something exciting going on, or think we have to be someone famous or whatever in order to have something worth writing about. And that's not what's true. We need to write our own lives, what we know, and that's what's valuable for us to write. Okay, let's just go around and read. If you don't want to read all of it, you could read a part of it, or read all of it. We've only got about 5 minutes, but is there anything in here afterwards?
I don't think so.
No.
But it's only 4 at a time.
But 5:30 is okay.
I don't even know what time it is.
5:30. It's only one day or...
This is supposed to go to 5:45, right? I mean, from 3:45 to 4:45. So if anyone wants to make early dinner, they're welcome to leave at the regular time of class.
It's not going to be early dinner tonight, is what he's saying.
5:30. There's only just one dinner.
Oh, there's only one dinner tonight. Okay.
It's not until 5:30.
Yes, 5:30. Okay, then we...
You're not listening.
Don't depend on me to get your meal. Who would like to start? Anyone?
I'll start.
Okay.
I felt caught. I scurried back and forth. I went to and fro. They were everywhere. I was the leader. What am I to do? I have the others I'm responsible for again. I head west? No, so I headed east. This time it was go. I couldn't wait any longer. I jumped over the daisies. They were so high and wide I didn't clear them. I leaped again and felt and fast, no, fleeting footed, cleared the village. I looked back and here the two little ones were bounding through the daisies, following, and the other mother. We made it. We were safe from those strange looking, unfamiliar things. I come to this place every day. I'm concerned about leaving the group for tomorrow. Maybe they won't let me after today.
Well, that's great.
Okay, what animals?
I know what it is.
Who knows what it is?
It's that mother deer with her little nose. They're
adorable watching them. Boy, they were really trying to figure out how to get out of there.
Okay, next.
Okay. Come, children. Here's a nice green lawn to nibble. Eat grass. It's good for you. Then we'll go down to the stream to drink. Your big brother's down there already. He's had his fill of grass. Look, all these new people, and some are dressed so fancy, all in bright colors and carrying bright flags. It must be a party. Oh, I'm so tired. I will lie down for a while. No, go away. You're too big to continue nursing. You should be eating grass. I'm so thin you can count my ribs. You were standing there, weren't you? I've nursed you two long enough. One day soon you'll be on your own and you must learn what good food there is in the forest. I need my rest. I'm so tired.
You know, I have a daughter who's 3-year-old but still nursing. So
No, I guess it wasn't you, but a couple
no, I was
of you were standing there. Yeah, I wrote.
So that's how you knew what she was writing about, too.
Yeah, I wrote it the same year, only I thought it was a big brother, a yearling or something, the fourth one.
Mark?
I broke out. At first, it felt like a burst of explosion. I wasn't quite sure where I was going. Someone was pulling my front feet. Oh, my feet, they made them hurt. All of a sudden, as if a gush of other stuff followed. Something had brushed across my nose and my eyes. I blinked. For so long I was in a cave. I could not stand. I could not focus. I felt so cold, oh so cold again. There was a roughness of something across my face. I could see a face and something looking back at me. I could feel myself breathe.
Sounds like a birth experience.
Birth of a cat.
A calf.
Yeah.
Baby cow.
Yeah. I was wondering what it was, but then I happened to see what I saw you. Ah, baby cow. Take part in the guessing.
It's very quiet now. I can't hear the sound that happens outside when everyone leaves. It must be okay now for me to curl up in my favorite chair and wait for people to return. I hope it will happen soon. I really like it when they are here, too. Then I want to get touched and patted and scratched and talked to before I will go outside. No matter how much they tell me to go outside, go wet, they say, but I want to be petted.
Dog?
Yes.
Pet dog.
Cat or a dog?
Which?
Dog.
Dog.
Yeah.
Slipping through the water, propelled by my enormous tail, I approach the mound of sticks and mud that is my life. When I emerge from the water, I wonder if others will see me, my see my grotesque protuberance following me wherever I go. I feel foolish with it and would be lost without it. The urge in me stays strong. I must cut and chisel and drag and build. What kind of life is this? Who made me thus? And how do I fit into all that is around me? Is it all some cosmic joke, some major experiment in communal living? A crazy house of strange-looking and strange-acting creatures? We blend with a warm earth, its grasses and trees and avenues of water.
Beavers.
You got
it
very
well. Yeah. You asked, those are all the same, all the questions that when we write, those are all the questions we deal with, those that he gave us. Do you want to read just the questions that you had in there?
Who made me thus, and how do I fit into all that is around me? Is it all some cosmic joke, some major experiment in communal living? Crazy house of strange looking and strange acting creatures.
Now, what did you say they're all the questions you asked?
These questions, when you're writing,
yeah,
whether you ask them point blank as he has in this piece, mm-hmm, those are the kinds of things you're dealing with. You start writing because you want to know more about yourself, I think. Mm. I mean, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... You might say you're writing for another reason, or you may start writing for your grandchildren or your children or something like that, but in the process, you're going to find out more about yourself. And you're still, and you're dealing with creation and the, whatever this great power is outside of us. I think those are all the questions. Whether we think of it consciously or not, I think those are the things that we deal with as we write. Yeah. It may seem like we're just dealing with little everyday things or just a beaver, but I mean, the questions, the answers are in all of life, all kinds of life, so they're there, whether we ask them or not. But I have a Mary Oliver poem. I read it in one of the first classes. But then she has the questions, but then she says, and what are you going to do with your one wild and precious life? So she asks the questions, and then she poses that one, too. So. Okay.
Well, mine isn't too exciting.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm glad you said that, because you'll be going to other writing classes and never, ever apologize for what you read, ever. Just read it as if it were
masterpiece.
Yeah. Well, what I'm really interested is in getting it, when you're mentioning the subconscious,
mm-hmm,
unconscious, because I had major cancer surgery and doing lots and lots of reading, they talked about going into your unconscious.
Right.
So I thought, you know, I have great difficulty doing that.
It's not an easy thing to do. And you can get it to happen once, and you think then you could do it again, but you can't. It doesn't. You know, when sometimes a hike will do it. Walking for me is a good way because you just get away from everything. I used to drive a half an hour to work every day, and that's when I did all my writing. And sometimes I even wrote as I was driving, which was not a good idea, but when I quit that job and I wasn't traveling that half hour in the morning and the half hour at night, I had to find a whole other space where my mind would work the same way to write again. So it's really tricky. That's why I do these exercises with people, because that kind of makes you forget. I mean, you concentrate on the exercise and try to do this, but it's just such a tricky thing to get it to work, and you can't always get it to do. And once you get it to do it, you can't do it over again the same way.
Uh-huh.
You have to do something else. It's kind of like turning your back on something and hoping it'll come up behind you.
Yeah.
So it really is hard. And when it happens, you're ecstatic, and you know it, and it's wonderful. But it takes solitude. It takes being alone. It takes being ready. And it takes accepting when it does come. If you want someone who really... William Stafford, in your library, you know, you don't need to buy these books. Go to your libraries. William Stafford is the gentlest, kindest writer you can ever read, and he will, I mean, this man gets up like at 4 o'clock in the morning and just sits or lies down on the couch and waits for whatever comes. And when it comes, he accepts it. And if it isn't something wonderful one day, then he lowers his expectations and accepts it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, most of the time, no one will ever see what I write. It will never see the light of day, you know, but it comes and I accept it. And so that's what we have to do. We have to really trust what comes to us, because it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get an image, for example, Robert Bly taking the ant, and then the image of the relationship that he used with that. When you get an image like that, Robert Bly says, then thank God for it, because you don't always get them. So it's a gift. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What does William Stanford write about?
What does he write?
Mm-hmm.
Poetry.
Oh, poetry.
Mm-hmm. He has two books on writing. He has one called The Australian Crawl, and this one, and way back, he's a pacifist, but he's also what, a Quaker or a he was in the camps. Instead of going into the service, he was in the camps. So he has a book that he wrote about that, and goes all over doing workshops. He lives in Oregon, and he has a son also, Kevin, I think his name is, who writes nature essays and things like that. But his poems, this is another thing. His poems are like, when he gets up and does a poetry reading, you don't know whether he's reading a poem or talking to you, because he believes that poetry should be as much like your own language. If you're writing in your own voice, it should sound like you. It shouldn't sound like Shakespeare or somebody else. It should sound the way you talk to each other. And so often, we talk to each other very excitedly and use really live images and metaphors, and then we sit down to write and we think it has to be something else, you know, something more learned or something, and it doesn't. It has to be just the way we are with one another. And he has one poem, what if after you were born, I can't think of how it goes. After you were born anyway, you were mixed up, and nobody knew who you were, and so you go through it's a story that could be true. I think that's the name of it. That's the name of one of his books of poems, too. But at the end, he's standing on the street corner, and all these people are walking by. And he says, you know, they're just walking by as if there weren't anything usual. He says, I could be a king. Because he didn't know anything about his background. I could be a king. You know, usually we say, well, I don't know who my mother is, and I don't know who my dad is, and I'm so awful. He said, I could be a king. So he has a wonderful way of looking at life also. He's really a marvelous.